from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. W. Kamau Bell was a stand-up comedian in San Francisco before Chris Rock discovered him, and now Bell is the host of the FX television series Totally Biased, a show he calls, quote, liberal, politically charged comedy from a 6'4", 250-pound black man. W. Kamau Bell returns to Forum to talk about politics, interracial love, making fun of Tyler Perry, and why the Bay Area made him the comedian he is today. Next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of the Forum program. Chicago-born W. Kamau Bell is no stranger to San Francisco, having spent a number of years living here as a working comic, that may be an oxymoron, before moving to New York to host the Chris Rock-produced FX television series Totally Biased. In 2007, he launched W. Kamau Bell Curve, Ending Racism in About an Hour. He's also produced two albums, a documentary film called Comedy Against the Machine, and joins us for this morning's second hour. And this is a second appearance on Forum. Congratulations.
Yes, I was here with one of your, I don't know how to say that.
One of my colleagues.
One of your colleagues.
Dave,
yes.
Iverson, I think.
Yes, yes, one of your colleagues, yes.
We also met a number of years ago when Ryan Stout, whom people in San Francisco may know as a stand-up comic, was a student in a class of mine. You wanted to come visit and hear me do it. My stuff on Glengarry Glen Ross by David Mamet.
Yeah, no, I was very excited to be there. It was a small class, and I felt weird about just wandering in like a student without a pass, but I did.
Well, you know, San Francisco has raised you, or finished raising you, I think is the way you put it.
Yes, yes. I was an adult when I got here, but I wasn't done being raised, clearly, according to many of my friends.
Change some of your views, like maybe same-sex marriage, things like that?
I wouldn't even say changed. I don't think I think I just was, I lived in Chicago for a lot of years, and I just had a, like, sort of Chicago mentality, which, you know, is a thing. And so I think that just coming to the Bay Area just sort of opened me up. I didn't have, you know, if somebody, I mean, you know, 15 years ago, if somebody asked me about gay marriage, I probably would have been okay with it. I don't know, but I wouldn't have had any real opinions on it.
I like Bobby Slayton recently was interviewed by David Feldman. These are both, like you, former San Francisco comics. And he was asked about same-sex marriage, and he said, I'm interested in some sex marriage. You know? There's a real trajectory here, though, if I can put it as such. I mean, you went kind of from being a San Francisco local comic, and as I understand
it... No shame in that. No shame in being...
No, absolutely no shame in that. But working... what were you doing? You're selling stuff in... among other things, a sex accoutrement type store?
That was actually when I was in Chicago. I worked at a condom store during that weird period where people thought condoms were going to be like a thing, you know, where condoms were like going to be iPhones or something. But that did not take on.
But then you suddenly find yourself being called the thinking man's Chappelle and the funniest political comic of them all and all this kind of stature.
Yeah, I'm glad. We all know that's nonsense. You know, Chappelle is the thinking man's Chappelle.
Glad to keep your humility there. What's the W for, by the way?
It's Walter, which is also my dad's name.
So do people call you Kamau, though, huh?
Yeah, people call him Kamau, yeah.
Because if somebody sees your name W, they might think Bush, right?
Yeah, although I had the W before he was around with his W, so I claim it. And I'll have it long after he's left the scene.
Why not just call yourself Walt?
Or, oh, my God. That's not a – Walt Bell. That doesn't sound like a comedy. It sounds like an insurance salesman, which is what my dad is. He sells insurance. Walter Bell.
So Kamau is – Kamau.
Like, Kamau.
It's like Kamau.
Like Kapow, like the old Batman TV
Kamau.
Show.
Kamau. I got it. Okay. 2005, Comedy Central, you said there will never be a president named Barack Obama. That comes back to haunt you some ways, doesn't it?
I was a Trojan horse. People seem to not understand that. It was my job to get his name out there among the youth of America, which is Comedy Central. And I did a good job, you know. And I've done such a good job, he's never thanked me.
Well, and now, as I said, you have your own show on FX, and congratulations for
that.
Chicago and San Francisco have led in this trajectory to New York, and some of the stuff is very funny. I want listeners to hear, in fact, some of the stuff you've done. But before, You've said you're not didactic, and I want to dispel that, too, because you're trying to get us all to eat sweet potato pie on Thanksgiving rather than pumpkin pie, aren't you?
That's my main social cause is sweet potato over pumpkin pie. If I had to really pick one of the things that I'm passionate about, you know, immigration, marriage equality, the end of racism, I think sweet potato pie would be the number one.
So you are a political and didactic comment. So
yes. When it comes to
sweet potato pie. And,
yes.
But you also want to... I think you once said, prove lies and truth.
Oh, that's possible. I've got a lot of stuff down here we'll talk about.
But I just want to hear something you did about Stop and Frisk, a very serious thing to take a didactic position on. But you didn't necessarily take a position on this on Totally Biased. You just suddenly, well, you did a kind of man on the street sort of thing. And I think it's going to be illuminating for people to hear. This is Danny Cut Six.
What if every time they stopped you, they gave you a soda and they called it like Pop and Frisk? Would that make it better?
Not for me, it wouldn't, because I could buy my own soda.
All right, all right. How about if the sixth time they stopped and frisk you, you got a free Subway sandwich? Get frisked, eat fresh.
Would that make it a punch card?
Yeah, like a punch card. Yeah, they just sort of click, 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 click. Hey, you violated my civil rights. Can I get a BMT? If every time you got stopped and frisked, it was by the president, we call it Barack and Frisk. Would that make it better?
Actually, somehow it would.
Yeah.
Barack and Frisk?
You can frisk me.
Oh, well, okay. Mm.
Michelle.
Michelle and
Frisk.
We can
work that out.
Hey, you work well with people out on the street. It's fun, isn't it?
No one's more surprised than I am. That was not something I went to the show saying, I demand to talk to people in the streets. That was Chris Rock's influence.
Well, it's also something that Jay Leno likes to take lion's share, credit for. But
I think Steve Allen actually goes back to Steve Allen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know my comedy history, even if Jay Leno doesn't.
Well, I'm impressed because Steve Allen's a little before your time, really.
Huh? Yeah, there's YouTube videos and books.
But, you know, pop is not a word in New York. They say soda in New York. They say pop in the Midwest where we're from.
Again, I'm trying to cross all lines and barriers. This is not just about social agenda. It's also just about people.
That's impressive. I mean, if you can cross the
pop and
the
soda.
Drinking pop and soda line, yeah. So much the better. There's an interview you did. I want to talk to you a lot about a lot of stuff, but there's an interview you did with Neil deGrasse Tyson, no relation to Mike Tyson, who was recently on this show, by the way.
He was on my show, too.
Yeah, and a good interview.
Thank you.
You're a good interview, too. You're both good interviews. But you said in this interview with... we should mention, an astrophysicist, African-American astrophysicist. He said, I'm a Buddite. I've never heard that word before. It's a blurred, which means a black nerd.
Yeah, it's sort of a new word in my lexicon, too. Once I got the show, I got hailed as an upcoming blurred. And I didn't know that was a thing, but I've now accepted it. I'll accept my title as one of the leading blurreds on TV.
I had a funny moment with Tyson, not Mike, but Neil. We said we would have a meeting and a conference call and all this kind of stuff after we were on the air. And I said, well, let me get some information. And Judy loves this story, I think. I said, I have to write it down in my book here. What is this? You know? I said, well, I'm not a Luddite. If you say you're not a Luddite, you're a Luddite.
Yeah, no. The fact you know the word Luddite means you're a Luddite, yes.
That's right. You also had a whole thing about that NBC racist Super Bowl advertisement, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah.
I mean, because you picked on poor Matt Lauer, but you...
Yes.
Give us a rundown on that and how that came into being and whatnot. I mean, the whole scale of racism that you did.
Well, yeah, a lot of the things that happened on Totally Biased come out of discussions in the writer's room. And that's the best way to write the material for the show, is that we actually have an engaged discussion about a topic. And then out of that comes the comedy piece. Because a lot of times that's how I find all my comedy angles, is through talking with my friends. Because my friends are all smarter than me, which is the best way to be a good person, is to have friends who are smarter.
More modesty.
Me.
I am impressed with your modesty.
I don't have a college degree, so I'm not being modest about that. But
that hasn't kept you down. Yeah.
No, I feel good about it. But I'm looking for some honorary degrees if UPenn wants to come back. But so we talked about it in the writer's room, and it was funny.
You donating a lot of money to UPenn? Is that how you...
No, I dropped out of UPenn. So
no, I'm joking.
They have plenty. But so we talked about it in the room, and one of the writers, Dwayne Kennedy, who's one of my mentors in comedy, who writes for Totally Biased, we were just talking about how we just couldn't get that mad at the commercial. This was a commercial about... it was a commercial for, I forget what it was, but it was a white American guy doing a Jamaican accent. And there was articles on the internet written about how racist it was. And we were just sort of like, we couldn't get that mad at it. It was like, in the scale of racism, it just was really low. And as soon as we said that, we're like, well, what does the scale of racism looks like? And then we showed it on the show. It's one of the pieces I'm most proud of. Because it was, you would expect that the black guy on TV would be angry about the racism all the time. And we were just like, oh, we can't get up for the game on this.
What is it, first 27? Slavery?
Yeah, the first 28 were slavery, I think. And then 29 was the movie Avatar, which yeah. I was really proud of that
which
joke.
Which is funny, too. But then Matt Lauer was talking about, you know, there was kind of charming to hear those voices from the island where we
all vacation, yeah. All of us vacation at the island.
Well, you jumped all over, man. That was good stuff. You know, we don't all have those vacations. Now,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like
yes.
On the island.
Yeah, my favorite line, it was my personal favorite line, it was apparently he only listens to the Bob Marley songs about weed and women and none of the ones about killing the white man.
Well, maybe the biggest fury you started was saying a black man couldn't do Spider-Man.
Yeah, people really took that personally because a lot of people think superheroes are real. In the ad campaign for the show, which was just a riff out of me talking about the show, about what I wanted to be, because the true thing is that when I was a kid, I wanted to be a superhero. But, I mean, I wanted to be a superhero. I wanted to play one in a movie, but I wanted to be a superhero. And so I said they don't let black men be Spider-Man, and I got all this. And I was referencing Donald Glover that was proposed as the new Spider-Man, and the internet went crazy about the fact that there couldn't be a black Spider-Man.
What superhero did you want to be?
Spider-Man or the Hulk. Those were my two favorites. Yeah. I think because as an only child, I had a lot of anger, and I felt like, and so I would watch the TV show The Hulk and dress up in clothes.
Why do you say as an only child you had a lot of it? What makes an only child have more anger than, say, somebody who's very competitive with his or her siblings?
I think as an only child, you spend a lot of time in your head.
But they say you're spoiled if you're an only child.
Oh, I was spoiled. That's why. But see, I was spoiled in my house. And then when I left my house, the world did not live up to my expectations of what I got in my house, which creates that disconnect, creates anger.
Made you more humble, though, too.
I guess so, yes. Well, this is my David Banner persona. But, you know, when I'm on stage, it's the Hulk.
And did you get any flack for saying Malcolm X is hilarious? Because he actually is very funny.
He is very funny. Yeah. I mean,
he's an icon, a major icon.
Yeah, no, but I mean, if you read the autobiography of Malcolm X or just YouTube his speeches, there's a lot of laughter in Malcolm X speeches that people don't hear because they're afraid of the words he's saying.
Well, I want to talk about how you got this FX show, which is launching you meteorically into a new sphere. I mean, Chris Rock actually literally discovered you, huh?
Yes, I think he discovered. I mean, he will not take credit for that, but in the way that, you know, Diana Ross discovered the Jackson 5, I think Chris Rock discovered me, yes.
Well, here's Diane who writes on our website, Chris Rock discovered W. Kamau Bell like Columbus discovered America. He didn't exist before Chris Rock found him.
Well, that's what Chris says. He's like, you were funny. You were going to have a career. You're going to have a career in show business. I'm just the one who helped to give you a little lift.
Well, does this mean you get a kid animation show, too? You follow the Chris Rock?
I'm doing the whole thing. I want a book. I want to be the voice in movies. I'm trying to do the Chris Rock palette. I think it's a good one to follow.
You reminded me, in fact, in one of your videos about Chris Rock's great line that the difference between being rich and wealthy is Shaquille O'Neal is rich. The wealthy person is the one who signs Shaquille's checks.
Yeah, the line is the white man who signs his check is wealthy.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing in a white man. We have those racial distinctions.
Well, I like to have Chris quoted correctly. That's all. It's in my contract.
Well, here's a regional distinction. I mean, you hear a lot about, and I'm sure some listeners will have some things to say about this, about how guys in San Francisco don't have the game. They're not as aggressive as they are in New York, especially where women are concerned. I'm talking just heterosexually here now. But the fact of the matter is that one hears about this a lot. And you actually went out on the street in totally biased and talked to some people, actually got wound up on a bullhorn. Let's hear this.
The guys are very aggressive. They tend to, you know, call at you like, hey, sexy mom, or
oh, do you come around here often? Like, what do you do? Can I, like, meet up with you? And I'm like,
he was trying to arrange to stalk you.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about street harassment?
I think street harassment is good, you know? I still feel like it's a good thing. You know, when I talk to women, they have better days, you know?
I like it. A man who's not swayed by facts.
What would you do to stop catcalling if you could do anything?
You're a dude. Talk to your dudes.
Okay,
you
all right,
know,
all
have
right.
These conversations with your boys.
Dudes, stop street harassing women. They think it's creepy. You got that? Creepy. And dudes who are harassing women in the streets, I suggest you try something like Adult Friend Finder. The only person who can start a sentence, hey girl, is Ryan Gosling. Ladies, on behalf of all men, I'm sorry.
Nice of you to apologize on behalf of all
men. Yeah, you do what you can. You do what you can. I mean, the fact is, I know there's street harassment in the Bay Area, but when I moved to New York, I really saw it. every day you see it. And it's just a part of the culture of New York, I think. And so it definitely happens in the Bay Area, but it just felt like because New York has so many more people, you see everything more often. You see pizza more often. And then you also see street harassment more often. And so Nato Green, who was a writer for the show, who's a great Bay Area comedian, came up with that idea of going out and talking to people. And it was really – people, women were really excited to talk about it. And it was a really great segment.
And there is a dramatic difference, I mean, between New York and San Francisco on that score.
Well, every score.
You New say York everything's excessive, but, I mean, that score in many ways really dramatic.
Well, no, there's a dramatic difference. I think there's just more people. It's just more of everything, and it's just a louder city. So the goodness of New York is probably more, and that part of New York is probably lower.
But men being more aggressive, I think,
yeah.
in general.
Well, people, I think, are more – but certainly, no, I'm not going to – New York is – I mean, I've heard that there's certain – the more populated a city is, this is what we found out during the thing, the more populated and the more tight the population is, the more street harassment goes up.
Now, you know that old joke about the old lady who's lost in New York and she says she comes up to a New Yorker to ask for directions. I know I should go blank myself, but could you help me in directions first? That aggressive set of style.
Yes.
You know, your show's been compared – and by the way, Totally Biased will be coming back for 7 episodes as a weekly show on May 9th. It will then return as a daily show in September on FX's new comedy channel, FXX, which sounds – slightly pornographic, is that
Well, no, that's – well, next we'll do FXXX, so we'll just, you know.
Triple
no,
X's.
No pants.
You know, there's been comparison to you and Bill Maher already and Colbert and Jon Stewart. More – you've said this more like Chelsea lately. That's probably more accurate, isn't it?
I mean, you know, I think that – I think people have to – The good thing about this is I think people are trying to figure out a way to catalog you because they want to put you in their heart somewhere. And I think the only way humans know how to do that is by comparing you to something else. I think if they couldn't compare me to anything, that would mean they didn't want me. So I'll accept all these comparisons. But for me, the show works best when we're doing it. It doesn't feel like any other show.
What do you think about Bill Maher, by the way, coming out and saying the taxes are too high in California? People are thinking maybe even though he gave $1 million to the Obama campaign, he's turning somewhat to the right.
You know, well, Bill Maher's never been a full-on liberal the way we like to think he is. That dude is definitely more of a libertarian than anything else. And also, you know, when you get rich, your thinking tends to change a little bit. I think that there, you know,
you're not only speaking personally here.
No, not yet.
But, not yet. But you hope
one day when I accuse of being a sellout and I'm rich, I'll be like, this means I've made it. But no, I think you know, rich changes people.
By the way, you apologized to all those men in New York on behalf of men. What did you think about the apology that was tendered by the president to Kamala Harris for talking about her as being the best-looking attorney general in the country?
You know, it's a rough gig speaking in public. And you know, if anything, hopefully, I can't judge the nature of the apology, but nobody's above an apology. And I like the fact that the president is entering the apology game.
Well, you know, George W. Bush never apologized, to my knowledge, about anything.
No,
he refused
no.
to apologize a number of times when he was.
And now
called.
He's sitting in bathtubs painting his feet. So clearly, he's going through some sort of mental anguish.
There's a number – you're labeled as a political comic. Again, people trying to essentially classify you.
Yes.
I've interviewed a lot of political comics through the years, and they often say you got to be crude and you got to be coarse and you can't really do that much political humor, particularly in the clubs, because people aren't that current. They don't read mm-hmm. – they don't keep up with things going on. Mm-hmm. You find that?
Well, no. I think that, you know – I mean, like I said, the label of political comic was thrust upon me. It wasn't one that I sought out. I think because I talk about race a lot and the president is black, suddenly I looked very political to people. And then I also just talk about a lot of culture issues that are political, like marriage equality and you know, immigration. And to me, those are all just issues of America. They're not necessarily – they're politicized, but I wouldn't – when I think of political comedians, I think of like Will Durst. You know, so – but yeah, I think in the clubs – the reason why I wrote my solo show, The W. Kamau Bell Curve, is because I wanted to be able to show clips of things so people would know I was telling the truth about what I was talking about.
You've actually said that your favorite comedian, and very different stylistically than you, is Bill Hicks.
Absolutely. Bill Hicks is my favorite comedian of all time. Doesn't mean I'm like him at all. It just means that he's my favorite.
It doesn't even mean that he influenced you necessarily then.
No, he certainly influenced me, but I think it's important to you know, I came from an era of comedy where a lot of people were trying to be Bill Hicks, and I was always very aware that I can't be that guy. But to me, the lesson of Bill Hicks was do what you do to the nth degree. Push it as far as you can. And I feel like, you know, I wouldn't have written a solo show if I hadn't taken that lesson from Bill Hicks.
If you've just joined us, we have W. Kamau Bell in studio with us, Totally Biased, W. Kamau Bell. He's a founding member, by the way, of the stand-up comedy collective, Laughter Against the Machine, co-host of the Field Negro Guide to Arts and Culture podcast.
I like how you did your shoulders there. You said Negro. You got a little bit like jaunty.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. You try to bring that word back, I think, aren't you?
I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of the word Negro. That was, I feel like, when black people really were at their best point. Like when the Negroes were angry, they changed a lot of things, you know? So I'm a big fan of Negroes.
But there was so much. People were very upset about that word. They said, you know, we want to be called black. We want to be called African-American. We don't want to be called Negroes anymore. That's a Spanish word.
Well, I don't want anybody else to call me a Negro. I just enjoy when I say the word Negro, I feel like I'm channeling the 60s and it really feels good to me. So I'm not necessarily wanting to walk in and have a white person say, nice to meet you, Negro. But to me, it's just like, I mean, Negro's still in the census. Let's be real. You know, so clearly America knows there's some Negroes out there.
Yeah, but I remember one of your man on the street things, you were talking to this guy who was wearing shorts and he'd been frisked, stopped and frisked. He said, Negro wearing shorts.
Yes.
So it's not just you. Right?
Well, no, I think the thing is, too, there's also the thing about Totally Biased is that I think some people appreciate, especially black people, is there's sort of a little bit of an inside dialogue happening that doesn't happen on TV. So if I say to another black person and call them a Negro, then they know where I'm coming from with it. So there's no sense that, you know, that I'm somehow trying to insult them. And I think sometimes white people sort of get this, where like, how can he say? Because I don't know. Well, the rules are different. Everything's context. You know?
You're trying to change the language. Listen, I heard you say Fox Pass, for example. I think.
Yes. I'm a big fan of words. You know, I use them almost every day. And my mom raised me to like words. So my mom's a big wordsmith.
What did your mom do?
She is a self-possessed person. She self-published her own books of famous black quotations in the 80s called Famous Black Quotations because there was no compendiums of books with black people quotes. There are a lot now because of her. And she sold like hundreds of thousands out of the back of our house and car.
Oh, so you are rich after all.
Oh, yeah. Self-publishing is the way to spoils. Yes. Self-publishing before the internet.
100,000 books?
Yeah. Before the internet. That's how you made money. Self-publishing. So, yes. She literally had to drive us to a typesetter. That's how crazy long ago that was.
Did your dad want you to be an insurance salesman?
Absolutely. He tried to give me the family business at one point.
So does he look at your life as somewhat of a disappointment then?
No. In the last few months, he's really come along quite well with it. My dad, to his credit, once he saw that I wasn't going to quit comedy, he really refused to let me quit because I like to quit. I used to try to talk about quitting quite often because it was really hard. And at one point, he's like, you've been in this too long to quit. And I think my dad, the thing he hated worse than my comedy career would be quitting my comedy career.
All right. I want to ask you a lot of other things. I want to find out why you feel the way you do about Tyler Perry. But before we go on with our interview here with W. Kamau Bell.
Kamau. There we go.
Let me invite you to join us. Our toll-free number is available and you can join us now. If you want to talk to Kamau, it's 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your phone call. So join the program. You may have seen him perform here in San Francisco. You may have seen him on television and on FX. Whatever, it's an opportunity for you to talk with a new maestro of comedy. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any question or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Kamau, you're waving to his wife and child, and they're waving back. It's a very sweet moment here. Well, the name Kamau.
Yes.
Tell us about it. I mean, as long as I've aborted it here a number of times, where's it come from?
It is a Kenyan name. It's Kikuyu. It means quiet warrior. From my research and what I've been told, Kamau is a great Kenyan king. So in Kenya, that's like naming your kid Michael.
So now, you took the name or your parents gave you the
my
name?
My parents gave me the name because it was that point in the 70s where black people knew the revolution was coming. So they thought they should give their kids African names. But little did we know it was the tech revolution. So I should have been named Bluetooth. But
Were you wearing a dashiki as a boy and all that?
I came up in the era of dashiki and, you know, and you know, the first era of sort of Africanization of the black community, not the one in the 90s. Where it was about just the mud cloth.
All right, you can join us talking about lots of things, but particularly about the career, the rising career of W. Kamau Bell. And our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email forum@kqed.org. Join the program. You can go to our Facebook page. You can tweet us. Our Twitter handle, @KQED Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending this hour with Kamau Bell, who is featured on FX television, has his own television show now, and it's called Totally Biased. It'll be coming back for 7 episodes as a weekly show on the 9th of May, and will then return as a daily show in September on FX's new comedy channel, FXX. And listener wants to know, can I hear Kamau's thoughts on the difference between New York and the Bay Area when it comes to food? Is New York City as obsessed with food as we are, as obnoxious?
No, yeah, I mean, New York, I mean, literally every bodega you walk past has a sign that says, the best sandwich in the world. So, which, so yes, New York is way more, I mean, they're very similar in New York and San Francisco. It's just New York has more of everything. So it feels very much at home in a lot of ways. Everybody's represented, everybody's there. It's just in New York, everybody's stacked on top of each other.
Well, you know, we talk about these differences between San Francisco and New York. I think you said at one point that San Francisco was the only comedy clubs where people hissed at you.
The only comedy clubs where people hiss in the world, I think. You know, if they don't like what you do. This just happened the other night. I actually said last night on stage at the New Parish, I said, I moved to New York, and somebody went, hiss. So that's a San Francisco thing. I don't think that exists anywhere else.
So if you're in New York and you say, I'm from San Francisco, I was raised in and matured in San Francisco, you wouldn't get hissing.
No, San Francisco has a chip on its shoulder about if we want to be the best, but we kind of think we're not, so we have a chip on our shoulder. Whereas, you know, New York is like, we are the best, and we don't have a chip on our shoulder. There's no competition between New York and San Francisco from New York.
Well, as long as we're talking about regional differences, you talk about Berkeley racism as opposed to Texas racism.
Oh, yes. That was the thing in my show, that people only get that in the Bay Area. But, yes, Berkeley racism.
Explain that.
Berkeley racism is that kind of racism that happens when somebody says, do you know the name of that Puerto Rican guy? You can't say Puerto Rican. That's racist. That's Berkeley racism.
And here's Neil. Neil, join us.
A couple of questions here. First is, what do you think of Bill Cosby's comments on blacks and on, how blacks are too in love with street culture and how that's doing them a lot of harm? The second question is, do you have any thoughts on black people's use of the N-word and how it confuses whites?
Well, it confused Michael Richards, too, I think.
Yes,
yes, that's for sure.
Well, first question, Cosby. He does talk about kind of pejoratively about street culture and too much made of it and pants being too low and all the argot of the street.
I mean, first of all, Bill Cosby's probably the best comedian of all time. So let's just start there. Had one of the best sitcoms of all time, which changed my life. So, but he's also at this point a black man in his mid-70s. And those are some of the angriest people on the planet.
Chris Rock has some very funny stuff about those.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Bill Cosby, I understand where Bill Cosby's coming from, because I think his approach to race relations was to be above it his whole career and to really sort of like, I mean, he's certainly given a lot of money, but to really sort of be race neutral and talk about family. And I think he believed that that would end racism. And I think as he's entering the final act of his life and he still sees racism, he's just like, it's really frustrating him. So I understand where he's coming from.
But what about the N-word? I mean, there was a lot made. Even Richard Pryor, who used it prolifically, said, I'm not going to use it anymore after a fashion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a dealer's choice as far as a black person is concerned why you use it. I certainly think there can be a destructive quality with using any of the pejorative words for anybody. I think the N-word, as we say, the N-bomb, as I call it, for the sake of this show, is one of the most lightning rod words in the English language. And I think that, you know, you're an American, feel free to use it. I think that white people sometimes get confused about the fact why black people use it and they can't. And the funny thing is, no, white people, you can use it. You just have to accept the consequences for using it. You know, and I think that sometimes, it's funny, evil white people will use it all the time, but good white people get so obsessed with the fact that they can't, that they think they can't use it, that then what happens is when a subject comes up where they think they can use it, they go too far with it, a la Michael Richards, and then you have to quit and go to Tibet like he did. Like, you just have to...
Tibet.
Yeah, so I think that a lot of times white people, and you see this once a year, some white person will use the word, and they'll use it in a way that's totally inappropriate, and then they'll get in trouble. And it's like, no, just, you know, use it if you want to, but you have to accept the consequences.
Well, you often talk about how racism is still persistent today, but in a different form. I want us to hear a clip now from your stand-up comedy album. It's titled Face Full of Flour. It's the first cut.
I think Brock's big problem is that he's a great guy. He knows what he's doing. He's in there working hard, but he's just too smooth. Nobody wants to see the first black president be under control. You know, I mean, I get, maybe Brock is smooth. That's just how he is. He can handle it. Maybe he's like LeBron James and the transition to the pros ain't that hard. But, you know, you got to be more like Patrick Ewing on the New York Knicks, Brock. Anybody remember Patrick Ewing from the New York Knicks? Remember that dude? That dude used to sweat so much during the game, he had to change jerseys at halftime. Barack, sweat through your jersey sometimes. Say what you will about George W. Bush, but it looked like it was hard to be president when he was in office. You know what I'm saying? Three-syllable word coming up. Anybody remember that commercial for Rice Krispie Treats where the mom is at home and her kids want her to make Rice Krispie treats, and she does, and she's shocked about how easy it is. And she realizes that if her kids know how easy it is to make Rice Krispie treats, they'll be bugging her all the time for Rice Krispie treats. So what does she do? She throws some flour on her face to make it look like she worked hard, like it was a lot of effort. She just throws some flour on her face. And then her kids come in, they're all excited. Yay, mom, you made us Rice Krispie treats. Yay, we love you. Give us all you, and you worked hard. We can see it on your face. You worked hard. And they bought it, even though we all know there's no flour in Rice Krispie treats. Barack, throw some flour on your face is all I'm saying. Now, admittedly, that joke is kind of hard because it ends up with the first black president in whiteface. And I know that's difficult for some people. But for technical difficulty, it's a 10. You know what I'm saying? The Russian judge is giving me a 10 for a technical difficulty.
Good material, and you're still laughing at your own material.
I haven't heard that
sign.
In a long time. Like,
yeah,
you know?
That was not the cut I was. We'll go to another, that other cut that I was about racism specifically in a moment, but it's from that same album. You hadn't heard it in how long?
Pretty much every cut from that album is about racism. I don't listen to my albums, and that's a joke that was so topical about the time of Barack becoming president that I stopped doing it very shortly thereafter because it just doesn't have the same impact. So yeah, I hadn't heard it probably in
still
3 years.
Making us laugh.
It's a good one.
Actually,
I was really pleased with that Rice Krispie analogy.
Yeah, I am too. I'm pleased that you're pleased. In fact, actually, I want to hear, before we hear the one about racism, about Native Americans, we're in California here, and you say a couple of things that would save the U.S. economy. One of them is legalizing marijuana. Let's hear that solution from the album.
If California legalized weed, we would make $1 billion in tax revenue the first year alone. $1 billion in tax revenue. That's just the first year. That's just in California. That's not all. What if all the states legalized weed? We'd be pimping tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? That's $1 billion. And that's just on the tax revenue from weed. That doesn't even include weed-related products. Like ding-dongs, ho-hos, Twinkies, everything Hostess, new flavors of Gatorade, new colors of vitamin water, bottled water, microwave burritos, churros at carnivals and fairs, anything shiny, you know what I mean? DVDs at the grocery store that cost $1 that you shouldn't buy, but you do because you're high. I didn't know Steven Seagal made a musical. We have to get 5 of these. We have to get 5 because the holidays are coming up and these are going to be valuable. Just buy all of them. Just buy all of them. Put the food and milk back. Yeah, it's DVDs, Steven Seagal.
You're working with popular culture, recognizable things for people who've been stoned. I mean, it's
and
you're
the,
right there. You're right in the zone.
That's the Hicks influence. Like Hicks would talk about sort of highfalutin concepts, but he would bring them down to pop culture. And so everybody'd be like, oh, I get it now. So I think that's definitely an influence. Hicks and Chris Rock does that too. So you can talk about anything you want to if you can sort of relate it to everyday things.
Also, Chris Rock likes to sometimes really emote, you know.
Yes.
I mean, he'll go, and you do that too now.
There was a point in my career where I was really aping him too much. Like I would repeat the setup, which he does a lot. It's like almost like a chorus, you know. And so I started to repeat the setup. And my friends were like, "You're doing that Chris Rock thing. You repeat the setup." I'm like, "Oh yeah, you're right."
You gotta establish yourself distinctive. Yeah. I mean, you've done it. Keep it up. Let's hear this Native American cut from again. Face Full of Flowers.
This guy's funny. I'm enjoying
this. It's just the moment you step foot in this country, you're participating in racism. I can prove it to you. Name your 5 favorite Native American friends. Exactly. See what I'm saying? You can't. And I mean, not mostly. Maybe some of you can, but I'm saying it's like we live in this country. We're participating in it. Is anybody else like me? We have a secret hope that the economy tanks bad enough that Native Americans pull all that casino money together and buy the land back and ship us all back to wherever the hell we think we came from. All you white people say, I'm from Ireland, but I don't know anybody in Ireland. I never met anybody in Ireland. I just like St. Patrick's Day. I don't even speak Irish. How do you speak Irish?
Also a good cut.
I know it's Gaelic people, so don't get all crazy.
yeah, right.
That was part of the joke.
You got a lot of feedback on that?
Well, you just people don't realize that there can be more than one type of joke, that you can be the joke where you purposely say the wrong thing. And so, like, people, we live in the fact-check era, so you get email. I get emails. Every comedian gets emails fact-checking. They're like, well, that's the joke is that I said it wrong, you know.
So what is it about you and Tyler Perry? What do you got against that film?
You know, it's funny. This album was recorded 3 years ago. I was against him way before popular culture was against him. So I, at this point, I sort of was not as against him anymore. And then recently he's made people be more against him. Like I'm getting a lot of emails about Tyler Perry made a bad movie. I'm like, yeah, which one?
Do you hear most of the criticism from, you think, black people or
No, black people. I mean, I feel like I was one of the early adopters of criticism of Tyler Perry, but now it's really an open discussion. Thanks to Twitter and black Twitter, it's an open discussion criticizing Tyler Perry, which is great. So, or criticizing, just having discussions that we didn't used to have. We only had them at the black people meeting, and we stopped having those in 68. So it's good to have those discussions.
But some of these figures who are well known to the public, who are targets, tend to get their own race or their own gender. I was just thinking about this because there was an article in Sunday New York Times, in fact, about a lot of people out there who hate Anne Hathaway, apparently. They're almost all women for some reason. They call the Hatha-haters. They tweet each other all the time about how much they dislike her and stuff.
Well, we live in a hater culture right now, and social media is responsible for that. You used to just say to your friends, I hate Anne Hathaway, but now you say them to your Twitter followers, and then it becomes a whole discussion as if it's important to talk about hating Anne Hathaway.
And you're flaming, too, all the time. I mean, I think that contributes to it, don't you think?
Oh, you mean like flame wars on the internet?
I don't know if that was the flaming stuff that goes on.
Yeah, no, I think the people we're all too up our own butts about our opinions right now. And so, like, for me to talk about hating Tyler Perry, at the time I said it, I was really happy with the joke, but I wouldn't do it in the same way now, because I think you have to try to have a nuanced discussion, which it's not hard. It's not easy to do in 140 characters.
Here's Darcy, who writes, I love that Kamau talks about things that make us uncomfortable, and while you are laughing, you sort of feel, wow, is this okay? I wonder how he felt about Django Unchained, and thanks for hosting the show with this energetic and somewhat optimistic comedian. Somewhat optimistic.
I'm totally optimistic.
What'd you think? Did you see Django Unchained?
I did see Django Unchained. Now that I work on the show, I have to see everything as it comes out. So we actually did a piece on the show about Django Unchained, and we went to Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, which was a very working class, formerly very white section of Brooklyn, and talked about the use of the N-word in Django Unchained. So, no, I think...
Excuse me, there was a great line in the Academy Awards. I don't know if you caught it about that. They said, the guy who does Family Guy...
Seth
MacFarlane. He said, there was a lot of concern about the overuse of the N-word in Django Unchained, but all they did was take it off of Mel Gibson's voice.
Another famous N-bomb dropper. So I think that Django Unchained is proof that to be an American, you have to be able to hold two competing ideas in your head at once. Django Unchained is probably Quentin Tarantino's most entertaining movie all the way through. And it's totally inappropriate. You can hold those two ideas in your head. But people get the idea, like, just because they enjoyed it, that they defend it as a piece of art. And it's like, no, you can enjoy it and also criticize it. And so I'm in the position of, like, I feel like often, like, I can think these two separate ideas and hold them in my head. That's part of being a human.
Yeah, but Spike Lee said it was an insult to my ancestors. He never even saw the movie.
Well, if anybody has the right to be mad at Quentin Tarantino without seeing his movies, it's Spike Lee. I totally accept his anger at Quentin Tarantino.
Here's Sue, who writes, I would like to know what will become of Kamau's Kickstarter-funded documentary, Laughter Against the Machine. I contributed back in 2011 and was supposed to get a special edition DVD of the film, but now I fear it will never see the light of day.
I would like to say to all of our Kickstarter donors, we are hard at work on the film. We had some technical difficulties with editing the film, and so we had to find some new editors, and so you will see that film. It may just be brought to your house by us individually, but we are currently working on it. We have new producers involved in it, and to be quite honest, at the same time that we were sort of working on the film, Totally Biased came out of nowhere, and so it really sort of shifted the creative focus of especially me into Totally Biased. But Laughter Against the Machine documentary is coming.
Now, are you sure Kamau is not anglicized? Maybe I was pronouncing it the Kenyan way. Do you think?
You know what? You could be pronouncing it the Kenyan way, but me and all the Kamaus I know pronounce it like this. So it's like you have to throw away Kamau, Kamau.
You got some affinity with Barack in terms of the Kenyan connection then, huh?
We do. We, you know, two dudes from Chicago with Kenyan names.
Yeah.
Although, unlike him, I don't know if I actually am Kenyan because we didn't keep good records of that stuff.
You got your birth certificate, though.
Yeah, I got the birth certificate, yeah.
Corey writes, I'm so psyched to hear your guest. I saw him perform 7 years ago at a Ghetto Gourmet event in San Francisco and knew he was destined for awesomeness. Anytime a smarty pants comedian can blend politics into their act seamlessly, well, I'm a big fan. Didn't know about the show, but will def check it out. Def check it out. And there's a tweet.
Ghetto Gourmet, that was performing in people's living rooms with Jeremy Townsend, who ran that. That was amazing.
A listener wants to know, how much influence does African music have on your work?
African music?
A little off the wall, maybe.
Yeah, other than it's probably in my soul somewhere, that's probably about where it ends. I'm really more of a Jimi Hendrix, John Coltrane, Living Color, Boots Riley fan. That's probably the music that has the most impact on me, Rage Against the Machine.
And here's Molly. Molly, you're on. Good morning.
Well, hello there, Kamau. We met last night at the New Parish.
Yes, we did, Molly. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you today?
I think you just Facebooked about my butt, if I'm clear.
Oh, my God, I did. I called it Slapalicious. I can't believe you saw that.
I thought your hands are in your pockets most of the time when you perform. What were you doing? Slapping your own
I have one of
keister?
Those, I have one of those classic African-American booties that you read about.
And, you know, I'm a butt
so
girl.
So do I, by the way.
Yes.
So, Kamau, I was calling in because I had a question. I am much like your daughter. I have a black father and a white mother, and I get the question all the time, what are you? Which I think is pretty rude because, you know, I'm a person. But so sometimes, you know, instead of, like, getting hurt, my feelings getting hurt, like my sister and I used to come up with some, you know, funny little things to say. And our favorite ones started just, you know, identifying ourselves as African American or, you know, and then we'd also refer to our hair as our half-ro and stuff like that. And when I said that recently, you know, as you know, the reason we met, I work with the Justice for Alan Bluford Coalition, and there's a lot of tension around race relations and that coalition. And recently when I've said, identified myself, you know, half-jokingly as African American, some of my white friends have been like, whoa, you can't say that. Whoa, be careful now. And I'm thinking, what exactly is wrong with that? So I'm calling you as the foremost authority on race relations America to ask you, am I okay to identify myself as a African American, and would you identify your daughter as a African American?
I would identify his daughter as being adorable. I'm looking right at her.
She's here, an adorable American. She's certainly.
Of course I'm joking, and I'm an adorable American, too.
Yes. I'm not an adorable American. I'm a scruffy American. But, you know, first of all, I think Henry Louis Gates would dispute me as the preeminent authority on race relations. And I met him recently, so I have to give him that credit.
Yes.
You acknowledge Henry Louis Gates and a few others maybe, too.
Yeah, Cornell. There's a long
list.
But I hear what you're saying. But I do think that... I think white people have to accept, and this is, I talked about this last night at the New Parish, that it's that what black people do, that when black people talk about race and racism, it's not really your area, white people. So how a black person chooses to identify themselves is not really a part of your, it's a little bit above your pay grade.
we take the caller.
In the same way that as a man, when women talk about sexism, it's not my job to go, I don't think that's true. Like, again, that's above my pay grade.
You've said in your marriage is an interracial one, and there are African American women who give you a hard time for that, right?
It happened early on. I mean, we live in the Bay Area in New York, so you don't see it that often. But yeah, certainly there will be stares, and you know, my wife will sometimes see them before I will. But yeah, absolutely.
Here's Barbara, who writes, what are your thoughts on how many interracial relationships include black men and white women, and how few include the reverse situation? Why do you think African American women marry less and don't often enter interracial relationships? There's a Stanford African-American professor who did a law professor.
Talk about above my pay grade. I can only give my personal opinions and impressions about this. I think it makes sense that at the same time that the nation elected a black male president, we almost elected a white woman president. I think that black men and white women have a lot of sort of similar ground, and that we both, on one hand, have one of the top things on the socioeconomic ladder, and then we have one of the bottom things. I'm a man, but I'm black. I'm a woman, or I'm white, but I'm a woman. And so there's a lot of common ground for discussion in that place, that we both sort of feel like we're halfway there. And so that's my reason. That's my opinion for why I think black men and white women can get along. I don't know the black woman thing. That's not my area.
Kamau Bell with us in studio. And by the way, SF Weekly named him 2008 Bay Area Comedian of the Year. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was the first time I got press. Hi, Swanheiser. Brilliant writer who used to write for the Weekly.
And we go to another call. And it's Lisette. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm a big fan of Kamau. I actually saw his solo act before he blew up with Chris Rock. And through that show, I realized that he had a very keen talent in talking about race in a way that makes people a little more comfortable with the discussion. But I would love to know from Kamau what he considers off limits when it comes to race or politics, or, you know, where he, you know, where the line is drawn, where his edge is.
For me, the line is where I can't find a good joke worth making. You know, there's certainly areas of things where sometimes I have to sit on them for a while, or I'm totally biased, we sit on them until we can find a good way to get into the story. So, for me, the only line is that this isn't a joke that I feel good making, or I can't find a funny enough joke to make. Like, there's times when you go, I will think of things all the time that I will laugh at and be like, I'm not making this joke on television, or I'm not going to say this joke on stage because it's just not appropriate to the thing I'm trying to create.
And there's certain things that are verboten. For example, when I interviewed Joan Rivers, she was talking about having written a joke because of Michelle Obama's – now, this is a white woman comedian, but because of Michelle Obama's fashion – being a fashion plate – she wanted to call her Blackie O, and she said, no, I couldn't use that. And for Joan Rivers not to use something,
that's
really, really sick.
But see, that's contextual. Yeah. If a black woman said she's Blackie O, then that doesn't become
Well, I think the listener wants to know if there's something contextual for you.
Well, no, I think
you talk about putting white guys in cages.
Well, for example, exactly. Yes, I can say that. That's fine. I think that's why Totally Biased works, is because it's not that things are, I feel, verboten, but there's just other voices that are more capable of discussing them. So, like, when we have issues that are deep into the LGBT area, I'll get one of the writers who's an member of the LGBT community to talk about it. Doesn't mean I can't talk about it. It just means that, like, let's give somebody who has a deeper stake in this.
It's like Howard Stern using Robin Givens.
Robin Quivers, yes.
Robin Quivers. Yes. Robin Givens.
Totally
back
biased.
With Mike Tyson.
Yes.
As his sidekick.
Totally Biased is exactly like Howard Stern, yes.
No, actually, but Howard Stern is always pushing the envelope and being coarse and vulgar in ways that it's just not your style.
No, I mean, I think that people have this idea that that when they think of comedy, they just sort of think it's this monolithic thing. And nobody, you know, I like comedy. Nobody really breaks it up into styles the way you do with music. Nobody says, I like music. They say, I like a type of music. And so I think the world is, the universe of comedy is big enough to have me and Howard Stern in it. I just think, you know, and I think you should be able to pick the one you like, you know.
What about profanity? Because I remember talking to Joan Rivers about the fact that she's become very blue. I mean, she's used a lot of profanity now and feels that's her. Not you, really, is it?
No, but I had a joke last night that referenced the
don't use the word.
No, I won't use that referenced the C word, if that's a...
Yeah, we know what that is.
So that, you know, but I feel like I want access to all the tools in the box. Like, so it's just like I don't want to use all the tools all the time, but I want access to them if I find a reason to use them.
C-word could be colored, too, right?
Yes, yes. Oh, colored. I use that word all the time.
Here's KD who writes, Mr. Bell is everything that is right with black entertainment. Unlike Tyler Perry, Mr. Bell helps to open your mind and eyes to outside world very few Negroes venture out to. He uses that word.
Nice.
And another listener writes, thanks for the great live show a couple weeks ago at Stage Works. This may be too early to ask this question, but do you anticipate any format changes to your show once it becomes nightly? And if it is too early to tell, anything you'd like to do more or less of now that it will be nightly?
I tried to talk FX into letting me just host the Thursday night edition of Totally Biased once the Daily Show, but they wouldn't go for that. You know, I think there will be some format changes. I think we're going to really hand some things over to the people in the show who have done some correspondent work, like Hari Kondabolu and Jeanine Brito and Guy Branum and Dwayne Kennedy, and really let them sort of run with some things. Maybe go out and shoot some segments themselves. And I really want to solicit more things from the comedy community. There's a lot of great content out there that's only being seen on the internet that I would like to try to get out to television.
Here's something you might not have expected. Listener writes, name Rossa, which is often an Irish name. Please let Kamau know that it is, in fact, Irish and not Gaelic.
Ah, so I was smarter than I thought. Thank you. It's good to know you're smarter than you think.
Often the case with you, isn't
yes.
it? And another listener writes, Kamau's material has evolved a lot over the last few years to include more focus on women's issues and immigration. Can you talk a bit about how his views have changed? Well, you did before. I mean, San Francisco helped that.
Yeah, San Francisco. Martha Reinberg actually helped that. She's a white East Bay lesbian with two brown children. So, and I used to sit in her kitchen writing the W. Kamau Bell Curve that she ended up directing for a while. And she sort of like pounded in my head, like, you can't end racism and make sexism worse. So she really is responsible for that.
Oh, by the way, I was talking about...
And my wife.
And your wife, yes, lest we forget. Always credit your wife. Bill Maher turning maybe more to the right. You know, David Mamet has turned a lot more to the right. I know another fellow Chicago lad and who you were very deeply interested in.
Well, there's two things.
Are you going to get rich and turn to the right, you think?
Well, first of all, you're dealing with rich white guys, which I think it's a natural swing to the right when you're a rich white guy. Also, David Mamet was for Chicago liberal. Chicago liberalism is not Bay Area liberalism. Chicago liberalism is already off to the right a little bit.
So you've become converted to Bay Area liberalism.
Bay Area liberalism, yes.
Another listener says, you never actually got around to answering that question, why he hates Tyler Perry.
Oh, that's funny. I would say if you go to Jezebel.com and read Lindsay West's article about Tyler Perry's new movie, I agree with everything Lindsay West says all the time. Lindy West says, including especially that article.
Stan, let's get you on. Stan, you're on.
Hey, before I bust on you, I would have to defend you in that old Gaelic is now called Gaelic and new Gaelic is now called Irish. So you're not wrong there.
Welcome to the 21st century. Yeah, there's exactly. Opinions every way.
I've sung in Gaelic, so I know it's a language. Now, I happen to be the white son of a white civil rights leader who was hunted down by the KKK for a quote-unquote end-loving sermon that he gave in 1964 when the civil rights laws were passed. I'm a guy with red hair who walks through life having very young blacks, especially male blacks, look at me up and down and see nothing but the worst imagining of a white person that they can see. They don't see the son of somebody who stood up for all people. And see, my comment here is that the civil rights movement was not a black movement. It was a human movement. And I think that we forget that sometimes. And I think we need to remember it in our comedy as well.
Well, some thoughts, serious question,
no,
comment?
No, of course the civil rights movement was a human movement. I don't disagree with anything he said. I certainly can't disagree with his personal story. And I don't feel like I said anything that would dispute anything he said. I think the thing as a comic does, you speak from a personal perspective. And I think sometimes in the 21st century, we expect for the artist to speak from every perspective or to cover every angle of every perspective. And when you're speaking personally, like I speak, and all the things I speak about are my personal opinion, I don't think I've ever said anything that would somehow dispute anything he said about his.
And let me thank you for the call, Stan. Actually, it was Malcolm X who made the distinction between civil rights and human rights. He said what we ought to be all about is human rights, but civil rights certainly had – it was a very diverse racial movement, to put it mildly, but about the rights of black people particularly.
But I think it's okay to say black people enjoyed the civil rights movement.
Yeah, I think so. And benefited from it,
yeah,
as you have. You got your own television show.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Martin Luther King Jr., for giving me a television show.
And thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. And senior editor is Dan Zoll. Executive producer, Raul Ramirez. Thank you for being a part of today's program. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.